I'm David Leventhal. I grew up in Newton, Massachusetts. I'm 35. I started dancing when I was 8, and I started doing a creative movement class at Boston Ballet that was designed just for boys. And so it was 10 boys and a male teacher from the company. And it was a mix of sort of pre-ballet, some modern dance, some stretching, some rhythm work. It was great. I loved it. And that fed into beginning ballet at Boston Ballet.
I'm John Higginbotham, and I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm 37 years old, and I started dancing at a little Dolly Doodinkle school called the Dance Den, which was run by Miss Nona, who was a chain-smoking tap dancer, and she was fantastic. And we had everything from Polynesian dance to ballet to jazz to tap. And I was usually the only boy in class, but there were probably, during my time there were probably like three boys circulating around.
I'm Brayden McDonald. I'm from Lowville, New York, which is between Lake Ontario and the Adirondack Mountains. I started tap dancing when I was 6. We had a local dance teacher, but basically tap was her focus. And I studied only tap for about 7 years before I started taking jazz classes. I didn't want to move my hips when I was young or wear those spandex pants. I got used to it, I guess, because I'm doing it about every day now. I started modern dance at New York State Summer School of the Arts in Saratoga Springs at Skidmore College. It's an incredible dance program, and that's where I found modern dance. And before that, I had studied painting as well in school and fine arts, and the modern dance experience was amazing because it took the performance, entertainment value of the dance that I had learned and incorporated the fine arts values of painting, drawing, sculpture, and fell in love with it.
And so when you guys, you know, when it became evident that this is something you were going to do, you know, seriously, what was the reaction like from family and friends? Was it acceptable and great? Was it strange? Was it a mix? And do you have any really distinct memories about that?
I was also a wrestler in peewee wrestling up until 7th grade. And at that point, and I think from tap dancing, my legs were very strong. So I was a great wrestler. And the coach wouldn't let me miss practice for dance classes 3 or 4 times a week, whatever I was taking then. And so he said I had to choose. And so I chose dancing. And he kind of gave me a dirty look. My older brothers were big sports stars of high school. And then a couple of years later, he came up to me in the hallway and he was like, "You know, I just saw you dance the other day and you're so great. And that was, you know, no hard feelings. And I think you made the right decision." But I've danced since I was 6. It's a really small town. I was really the only guy taking classes. And it was weird for a little while. My brothers harassed me a little bit. But then once people saw shows and saw that I was actually dancing and not, I don't know what they thought a dance class was or what you learned, but once they saw a show, and I think, you know, I was good at it when I was little because I liked it and I was practicing all the time. And once people saw that, it was a total change. People didn't think it was weird, and they were very supportive.
This is not very dramatic, but I found people to be very supportive throughout. I can remember two incidents. One was during a high school PE class. Our sort of section for that semester was a weight training course. And I remember that was the only time that I was actually directly harassed for being a dancer. And I also remember my dad, who was very supportive, I mean, continues to be very supportive, sort of tried to gently encourage me into a college that offered more variety than dance. And then years later, when I was in college, and he came to see one of the dance concerts there after the show. He came up to me and said, "Oh, you can do this." Like, I could see that something had changed, and he was then completely confident that this would be a reasonable way to make a living.
I also experienced quite a lot of support. I guess I wish we could all tell you a story of, you know, the years of humiliating treatment like Billy Elliot receives from his family. But I guess personally I experienced several phases of either being really involved with dance and then sort of walking away from it. So I was very intensely involved with dance, ballet in particular, until about age 13. And as one of the few boys at Boston Ballet that age, we ended up doing a lot of performing. So we did, you know, Nutcracker season. We did 32 shows in December. And that kind of offset the strangeness of what I was doing to my friends, because they saw, oh, wow, you're actually at a big theater doing the Nutcracker. I guess this dance thing's not so bad. It just seemed like a normal performing experience as opposed to some weird ballet thing that boys don't do. So they kind of grew to accept it because it was an annual event. And but then at 13, I guess I just got burnt out. I was taking six classes a week, at least at Boston Ballet School, and I just decided to stop cold turkey and play soccer instead. So I played soccer for a while, and then about 2 years later, I was in London for the summer, and I had nothing to do. My parents were working over there, and I decided to go back to an RAD summer program. And it was the best thing. And I figured out that I actually really liked dancing. But I realized I had to come back to it on my own accord without anybody telling me I should or shouldn't. I mean, my parents were very encouraging when I was younger, and that was great. But on the other hand, when you're that age, it's hard to sort of listen to yourself and figure out what you really want to do. So it was good to have that hiatus because I could come back to it for myself. And I continued dancing through high school, sort of in secret. I came into the high school a year later because I was in England again for a year, ninth grade. So I came in already feeling kind of like the outcast. And to announce that I was also a ballet dancer was not okay for me. So I did actually keep it pretty quiet. I remember very fondly, though, my senior year, we did a kind of demonstration of our non-professional track class at Boston Ballet, because at that time I was only taking twice a week. And I came out to do the first part of the class, and I looked out, and four of my high school teachers were there. My newspaper advisor, because I worked on the newspaper at that time, had secretly told them that I was doing this showing, and so they came to cheer me on. And that was really nice, because I hadn't really talked about it at all.
You were outed, huh?
I was outed.
It's interesting talking to ballet dancers. They often talk about the men about a huge stigma, and I don't know if you guys remember a few years ago, some City Ballet guys got into some hot water for this article in Details, in which they talked about how great it was to be around these women who were scantily clad. And this sort of crass, you know, it was a Details magazine that they had taken it upon themselves to participate in. Do you think that there is, that with modern dance, there isn't such a stigma? And it's interesting that you talk about not feeling comfortable with ballet. Or how have you, I mean, it sounds like you haven't particularly felt that there was a stigma for what you've done.
You know what, I would say that even growing up, people would always ask me, is it difficult to be a boy dancer? Because of these ideas of the stigma. But I remember thinking, I never really felt it. People were always so cool. They thought it was cool. At least that's what they said to me. And yeah, what people seemed to think it should be was not what my experience was. But I was also not a strict ballet dancer, so maybe it is a little different.
I think I had the reverse Billy Elliot story, because I started with tap dancing and didn't study ballet until I was 17 or 18 years old when I moved to New York. And to me, I didn't want to dance in a ballet style. I never really liked watching ballet on TV. Is the only place I had access to see it, but except Baryshnikov. I would watch White Nights, the beginning of White Nights is sort of worn out on my video cassette. And I didn't want to wear the tights. I didn't want to stand there and have people look at me. I felt like ballet was so static. And tap dancing, I could move, I could entertain, you know, there's rhythm in my feet, I'm making music too, and it's fast, and you're on and you're off. And ballet, it seemed like you'd do a little thing and then stand there, and just people would look at you and you weren't really doing that much, and it was so exposed that I was completely uncomfortable. I never wanted to study it. And then once I studied it, of course, I realized that not all ballet is like that. You know, some ballet is, and the technique is amazing, but I think I had a reverse story.
So you two have seen the play, is that right?
Mm.
Or
yeah.
And you've seen the movie?
Yes.
So what do you think? Did it ring true to you? Did it seem?
Well, there's something that happens in Billy Elliot that is another layer to our stories, and that is a layer of economic class. That in this coal mining town, the expectation is that you're going to do something that's going to continue to bring solid income into the family. Billy Elliot changes that pattern. He says, I'm going to follow my passion. And I think for us, we may have similar stories in that way. There may have been certain parental pressures to follow a certain career, but in Billy Elliot, I think that message is very, very strong, that Billy is not only doing something that is perhaps unacceptable in terms of his gender, but it's unacceptable to his economic class, because what kind of job is dance? I think the difference for us is that we all, maybe we did or didn't worry about that, but we were all in a place, or at least in a society, where there was some path, there was some avenue to making a job out of that passion. And I think for Billy, that wasn't clear at the beginning. And then, of course, he has this wonderful experience, and he's sort of carried into a career. That's a big difference, and that's something that I think growing up in the United States, at least in the 70s and 80s, we did have access to role models, people who had done this as a career and could make it work. And I really like that part of the story, because he is like this light in a town that is decimated by economic depression. And he's not just saying, well, I'm going to go work for the family and earn a living. He's saying, no, I'm going to completely subvert the paradigm. I'm going to go out and I'm going to follow my heart. I'm going to do something that I want to do.
And I think there certainly is, you know, and this isn't just for dance, but in the arts and for men and women, there is certainly that idea of, well, it's, you know, when are you going to get serious and have a real career?
Yeah.
My dad was born in 1918, and he grew up in an all-Irish town, New Boston, in Montague, in northern New York State. My great-grandfather came through Canada, and there's actually a route, the McDonald Road is still up there with the house that he was born in. They didn't have electricity until 1945, and we never had money growing up. I don't know how my parents raised six kids on the income that my dad made as a carpenter. And they always seemed to find money for me for lessons, for tap shoes. My dad would put the taps on my tap shoes and build props for the whole dance class. He made maracas out of soda cans and gravel from the driveway and nailed them on and spray painted them, and that, you know. So it's amazing that he was that supportive, but he was always known as the dancer in the town. I mean, he was always like the guy at the local dance that cut the rug. I think the tradition of dance, especially in Irish, you know, families, isn't there anymore, but it used to be. I think at the turn of the 20th century, there was a spirit of dancing that was part of the community, and I think he was just really happy that I was continuing that. So I'm extremely lucky to have to that figure.
And when you say dancing, was it step dancing or?
Yeah, just folk dancing and step dancing. He didn't have any formal training, but I think you just learned from the generation before you and copycat things or make up your own and just grab somebody and start swinging around, I think. He taught me a few tricks, I have to say.
So other thoughts about the play or the movie and its portrayal of this kid?
Well, I would just say about the play, something that rings true is the strength of his family with him. You know, they're very, very close. And I would have to say that that was also true for me. And there was also a grandmother involved, you know, very involved in my growing up and just like for Billy. While, unlike Brady, we didn't have a family tradition of dancing, everybody in the family was sort of gung-ho about the arts in general, and we were always, my sister and I, always exposed to many different types of performance. And even my father, he would even perform a little bit in some of the community theater productions. That is something about the show and the film that ring true, is that the family support system has made everything, if not entirely possible, which maybe it has, at least way more pleasurable, you know.
One of the things that I really loved about the play, maybe the only thing, I wasn't that big a fan, but I loved how they left his sexuality ambiguous. You know, it didn't matter in the end. And I was thinking another ballet dancer, he just left ABT, and I'm blanking on his name, but he had an article in Newsweek, an op-ed piece talking about, you know, being a dancer and how masculine it was and blah, blah, blah. It seemed to me that it was sort of the equivalent of Obama's campaign saying, you know, well, he's not a Muslim, and you understand why he's doing it, but you sort of think, well, couldn't you just say, well, what does it matter if he is?
I mean, I can't think of that many other jobs where sexuality is even discussed as an issue. So why in dance, I wonder? Why is it even an issue? And, you know, you look at the Obama campaign, all of the aides and the assistants were talking about it, but he didn't talk about it. He mentioned that he was, you know, was a Christian and had been going to the same church for 20 years, but that was about it, because he wanted to focus on the issues. And I think for most of the male dancers I've met, it's really the same. You want to focus on the art. It's not about... I think people often bring strange attention to it by talking about either how great it was to see all these scantily clad women when they were young, or how incredibly masculine it is to dance. It can be wonderfully masculine to dance. It can be wonderfully feminine. I mean, one of the great things about dance is it explores the holistic entity of the person. It's not just, you know, one side or the other. I mean, you look at great ballet dancers. The wonderful thing about Misha is that, yes, when he needs to, it can be incredibly strong and masculine. But there are moments when it's very soft and it's graceful in a way that you might think of as feminine. And I think dance forces you to think outside of those black and white labels. So in some ways, by bringing attention to it, it really does a disservice to the art form. The wonder of the art form is that it's both and rather than either or. You know, you can be masculine and feminine. You can be straight and feminine. You can be masculine and gay. There's no, you know, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. So I wish, you know, whenever I hear those articles about ballet dancers who got into dance so that they could chase women, it seems like a ruse to me, because at least the reasons I got into dance were because I really liked to dance and I really liked the music that I was listening to. And actually, I was really inspired by the men that I was seeing dance, because that's what I wanted to achieve, you know, these incredible dancers. And that's what I wanted to get to. It wasn't to pick up the ladies, but that's just me.
I don't know if this is quite related, but I'm just going to throw it out there. I realize in listening to you speak, one of the teachers I had growing up, this man, Steve Primus, who was Russian Orthodox, probably the most masculine man that I've ever met. And every Saturday he would teach a sort of marathon ballet class. It was supposed to be 2 hours long, but he would run 3.5 hours. And he was so hardcore. It was rumored that he slept holding an iron bar on his chest. He would only ever let himself sleep for 4 hours a night. He would, you know, it had to be very cold in the room. He also had a very large family, maybe 8 kids or something like that. And he was all about ballet. I mean, he was a ballet master. And he was, he's no longer living, but he was a great teacher, probably the most pure ballet teacher that I had at the time. And so if that's an example of what a man in dance is like, I've never met anybody more masculine than Steve Primus.
Are you going to say something? No. Okay. Does it seem that really there's this talk of there being a stigma, but you guys have all had great experiences. I mean, in talking with your colleagues, does it seem like there isn't so much of an issue, or there used to be and it's eased, or really depends?
I think that it is tough to be a male dancer, especially in your formative years. I think that we are very strong people, and that you have to be to study dance, because it's not even if you have all the support in the world, it's not an easy job. There's not a lot of financial payback or pay, you know, at all for many people in the field. So you have to really want to do it. You have to put your blinders on and do it against all odds. The money, the relationships, touring, the physical strain. And I think that by the time you're a professional, you certainly don't really care what general masses think of you, because you've chosen this path and you've thought it through for years. When you're younger, I think it is harder, but the reason we're here is because it didn't matter to us. And I'm sure there was a lot of things that we don't remember, situations in which we felt uncomfortable or people saying a certain thing. And personally, I just tuned it out. So, you know, I just don't have, thankfully, I don't have the memories of all of that.
Also, we tend to be with like-minded people for hours and hours every day. It's not like we are taking ballet with certified public accountants. We're taking ballet with other dancers. So there's a common ground that is we take for granted.
And I think because of that, there's a level of tolerance and understanding that other workplaces would just be in awe about. I mean, and that's the wonderful thing about working in dance and probably in the other arts as well, that, you know, we are, as in so many areas, we are the wave of the future. This sort of equality and tolerance and respect that happens here is, I think, still probably quite rare in the society, where in a lot of corporate offices, workers who are gay or lesbian are still uncomfortable without saying anything. You know, they're not out at work. And, you know, we're in the 21st century now. It's time to build workplaces where tolerance and respect are first and foremost for everybody, not just for the married people, but for every single employee. And so in that way, we're really a model for the rest of society. And so I think that sort of offsets the feeling that we're like way out in left field. I think we feel like we're on the progressive edge of how things should be.
And you're also in a company that has been a model for tolerance for difference, different, you know, body types. I remember Mark saying to me in an interview a couple of years ago that he sort of, you know, he could no longer be bothered, or he didn't have the time to sort of be dealing with political issues in his work in the way that he used to really insist in terms of different roles and, you know, really thinking, okay, who's lifting who and who's playing which role. Mm-hmm. But is that a legacy that you feel is particularly strongly in this company or in talking to him?
This company is about the group, and it is about everybody being on equal standing in what they do in the job. So I do feel like that. Even if Mark no longer wants to shout out the politics of that, it certainly exists.
I think after shouting out those politics for all of those years, it became a part of him where he didn't have to think about it, and it just comes out in his dances. If he wants two people to do something in that corner, it's more about two people doing something in that corner, and whoever happens to be standing there are the ones that get choreographed into that section. So without trying to do this political maneuver, I think it just is a part of his aesthetic and the way that he uses people, sometimes as paint on a canvas, really, in some of the new work we're doing, which is really interesting. But if he wants red, he uses the person that, you know, has that quality, or if something else. If there's a big lift, chances are it'll be a woman at the top because they tend to be lighter. And if you're going to step on somebody, you know, you wouldn't take the thinnest arm person, which, you know, maybe a man or a woman that has the thin arms. So you're going to put someone that can hold the weight on the bottom. And he has people in the company that are in, you know, both very lightweight men and stronger women that can lift a man. And he just uses that, I think, without thinking too much about it. He thinks about the personality more than the gender.
I think that's true. I think in the most recent work, you know, Brady and I have a duet together. We're paired up. And that just kind of happened by chance. It wasn't a political statement on Mark's part. I think he just, you know, Brady and I ended up together, and Mark liked the dynamic that we had going on. So it stayed that way. You know, so much of this is in the eyes of the viewer, too, because the audience can say, oh, well, you know, that's obviously Mark representing a gay couple. And it's fine. People want to think that. But that's not always what is behind the work now. I think probably 20 years ago, that was more of a political statement. But now I think it's really just a statement of, as Brady said, this idea of palette and color and personal dynamics working together. You know, sometimes interesting things happen when men dance together, and sometimes interesting things happen when men and women dance together. So it's really more about physical interaction than about gender interplay, at least in Mark's work.
Yeah, it's totally true what you say about it being in the eyes of the beholder. It's fascinating to me. I think there was a recent review of one of your works, one of his works, and there was some comment made about how it's, you know, well, there are his PC lifts again or something. And I think that, you know, Bill T. Jones is the choreographer I always think of also, and people say, well, you know, he's always going to make a point of being multicultural, as opposed to just thinking, well, you know, he's based in New York. We sort of are. But it's fascinating to me how those sort of get pointed out as, well, you know, there they go. So, mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.